very special episode of Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. This is Nicole here, and as always, I am joined with Rolando and our producer, Eddie Z. But in addition, we actually had... Hey guys, that was a little delayed. I'm actually kind of surprised at how
that's on
that
you.
We
said it when you said our names. That's your internet.
Well, we also have a very special guest with us, Rolando. Actually,
you want me to introduce him? Yes. So we are joined by a good friend of me and Eddie's, Nicole. This is possibly your first time meeting him. Maybe you met him at my wedding, but we were all drunk, so who knows? But we have the honor of having Joe Gambino with us. He is the creator of A Bitter Cup of Joe, a online web series, YouTube personality. Yes, that's right. You qualifies as personality. You have a show. I don't. I have a podcast. That's all I have, Joe. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I think I'm an influencer. Is that what the kids call it today?
Do you have the threshold minimum requirement?
I have no idea what it is. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
So I do want to tell Joe that the first time I ever saw any of his work was when he did a parody of Hamilton, but with as a musical form of Florence Henderson, which as a gay girl, as someone who prefers everything like pre-1983 and musical lover, I was just all about it. I remember watching this and being like, okay, well, Rolando's some, because it was a grad school. So I was like, Rolando's someone I got to hang out with. And who is this guy? And it's a very special episode because today we're actually going to take it back. We're doing a throwback and we're doing something that we've brought up many times on this show. And we kind of are like, F it, let's just do it. We're discussing.
We need content.
We need content. Yeah. You know, you guys are, and you guys have wanted this episode, whether you've realized it or not.
Of course.
So,
right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We are covering the iconic American television show, The Brady Bunch, the original run from the 1969 to 1974 version. And then we're going to jump to the 90s when we're going to cover the movie that adapted it, remade it, made its whole brand new thing. The Brady Bunch movie in 1996. Mm-hmm. So this is why it's a very special episode. Let's talk about relationships with Brady Bunch. You know, who watched the original show in their youth, who didn't?
Oh, Nicole, I think you know the answer to that. Are you asking who watched it, like, as it actually was on for the first time?
Well, so I did actually watch some of it growing up myself, so.
We were old enough, Nicole, to like...
It was in syndication, though. Yeah. And
oh, sure. It was... Yeah, it's always been in syndication. Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but when the movie came out, it had a revival.
Oh, yeah. It became popular after the movie had come out? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That tracks, actually, because I feel like that's when I started watching it a lot more. Growing up, I would occasionally watch The Brady Bunch because it would be on Nick at Night, I want to say. Did they play it a lot on Nick at Night? I feel like it was a Nick at Night where I was watching it.
It made the rounds of all the local, like the local
right.
Channel 5, Channel 11. It was all over.
Now I remember it on Channel 11 too. Like yeah. Okay, so yeah, maybe it wasn't even cable. Maybe I was watching.
Yeah, but I watched it when they aired it originally. I was 9 years old when in 1969, and so I watched it every week as it came out on Friday night, and then followed by The Partridge Family and Room 222. So. Yeah, I literally grew up with it. I'm the same age as some of the cast.
Yeah, and you're awesome. Your target audience for this show too.
Audience.
Yeah.
when we do, it's so funny. We've done this podcast for almost 3 years now, and I don't think we've ever had the target audience from when the original had come out. Yeah,
first. Yeah, over 100 episodes
with the exception
later.
Of Power Rangers for us, but like, yes. You know, and like the stuff.
So when you did Blythe Spirit, you did not have the people who saw the original show on.
Sadly not. Yeah, if only. But yeah, so a little bit about The Brady Bunch, right? It debuted in 1969. It was created and developed by Sherwood Schwartz, who is known for what other show, Rolando?
Greg Schwartz?
No,
I know.
Sherwood Schwartz.
Who's that? I have no
idea. You don't know the name Sherwood Schwartz. Okay.
Am I supposed to?
Well, he's known for his two biggest hits, I would say, is The Brady Bunch and
Does the guest get to answer?
You can say a joke. Go for it.
Gilligan's Island.
Gilligan's Island.
Oh, I don't know anyone's name. Is he Gilligan?
No, he created it.
Oh, he created it. Okay, I'm here thinking you're asking for one of the actors.
No, Gilligan was Bob Denver.
Yes,
never would have known that.
Okay, well, so Gilligan's Island, major, major hit of the 60s. I mean, everybody, whether or not they've seen the show, they still know the show. And he followed it up with The Brady Bunch, which I think is another one that is like kind of stretched in our pop culture. And he came up with this show, you know, one, he needed a follow-up to his smash hit. And he read actually about a statistic about saying how 30% of American families are actually living with siblings from another marriage, like step-siblings, half-siblings, or yada, yada, yada. And he thought it would be a really interesting idea to make a family-friendly show that was about blended families. That was something that we hadn't really seen before. Thus, the Brady Bunch was formed.
So they are a blended family. Okay, I'm just going to ask this. I never watched the show from beginning to end, but did Marsha and the older brother, did they ever have a thing in the show? Or
Greg?
Was that just all conjecture? Was it Greg?
Yeah, his
the
name
actor,
was Greg.
The actors?
Not the actors. The characters.
Oh, no.
No, that's...
So that's just... Okay, got it. All right. I never watched the show religiously, so I only know there were... But did the actors... Okay, the actors did. Now, wait. Did he also have a thing with Florence Henderson?
I understand that they went on a date. Like he asked her on a date and she was like, yeah, sure. Let's go on a date. And I don't think it was what he wanted it to be. And she was just humoring him.
I believe that. So this guy got around.
Greg Brady.
Greg Brady.
Yeah.
Johnny.
So wait, do you remember the behind the scenes or behind the music that the VH1 did about the Brady Bunch? Is that where you're getting your info from?
They did one?
I'm pretty sure they did. Well, I mean, come on, you know, like early 2000s, you know, that was like the era. 70s stuff was what people wanted to like know the truth about. And I mean, we know some stuff now, you know.
No, I mean, I remember, I think Lifetime did like an original movie where it was like all the scandalous stuff that was happening backstage.
Oh, really? Yeah, what else like, do you remember them saying about the scandalous behind the scenes?
All right, so I remember the father Brady was a homosexual.
Yes, Robert Reed.
Okay, that was like one.
Robert Reed.
Yes, he was closeted because he had to be.
Yeah, so that was what. Yeah, so they made a lot of that scandal in that movie, and I remember distinctly a vivid image of like the oldest Brady getting out of bed with Florence Henderson.
Wow.
So I think they really went into, I think they really took that storyline. They're just like, you know what? They went on a date. So we're just going to say they banged.
Okay. Well, there's just and an interesting piece of trivia about Robert Reed, who was the, if not the first, one of the first people to portray a trans person on television in a fictional character on a show called Medical Center. It was a very special episode because it was a two-parter. And, you know, interesting for a gay man to take the chance of playing this character when he was closeted at the time. It was after Brady Bunch.
It was 1975.
And at the end, in the last few minutes of the second episode, they had him in as presenting as a woman. You know, in those days that was groundbreaking. So, and possibly career threatening, especially someone in the closet. So, you know, props to Robert Reed.
Well, this is interesting. I would love to watch
a little bit, you know, Pride Month just ended, but now we're still dropping that Pride knowledge.
Yes, we are.
Pride all year round.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. So that's why if you're wondering, guys, where's part two of our Pride special? Well, Pride is every day, all day. So you know what? It will come out soon.
Amen. I mean, the one thing that I do know about the Brady Bunch is that, you know, some of them after the show might have dabbled a little bit too much into the party scene. For instance, it's pretty well known that Maureen McCormick actually did develop a really strong cocaine addiction. And I think she even got arrested. Marsha.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Marsha.
Mm-hmm.
And no way.
I even remember in the early 2000s, like, I think there was a show with Christopher Knight who played Peter where it was like marrying Brady or growing up Brady or something like that.
Yeah. Didn't he have a dating show and then he ended up with...
He actually had a reality show with one... He married one of the contestants of America's Next Top Model. I don't know if she actually... She might have actually been a winner. Mm, and
I remember her. Yeah.
I think the title... I don't remember. I think it was something like marrying a... I married a Brady.
My Fair Brady. That's what it's called.
My Fair Brady. Okay.
My Fair Brady.
And well, it was like a reality show just to follow them around. And naturally, they were nutcases.
Yeah, because I remember they met actually during the taping of another reality TV show, which was like this. It was like a Big Brother type show where they would throw all these has-been into a house.
Was that the Surreal Life?
Yes, that's it. That's where they met. They met during the Surreal Life.
Man, I have too much of this stuff stuck in my head.
Well, the Surreal Life is iconic because I think the Surreal Life also gave us a relationship that was Brigitte Nielsen and Flavor Flav.
Yep.
So that is two great American relationships that came out of one reality TV show.
See, I never had a crush on either of them, so I didn't watch that one.
Yeah, that's great. There was actually an urban legend that Cindy became a porn star, but that's not true. She did not.
Cindy?
Yeah, I think people are... It just also shows how gross men are, where they're like, yeah, Cindy, the baby in the Brady Bunch, became a porn star. Like, that's disgusting. Who started that myth?
It is a gross man thing. Like, there was like a young Disney Channel star who, the moment she turned 18, people were already sexualizing her.
Terrible.
Maybe with Selena Gomez and stuff, but like, it's just like, guys, like, she just turned 18. Like,
yeah,
she's still got milk in the tongue, you know?
Yeah, it's terrible. But, you know, we're actually spending all this time talking about our own recollections and relationships with it, that maybe we should just break it down to somebody who's never seen The Brady Bunch before, what The Brady Bunch is. And The Brady Bunch, it's about a blended family. It's about a widowed woman. Oh, my gosh, what is her name again? Carol Brady. That's her name.
Carol
Brady and her three children, Marsha, Jan, and Cindy. And then Carol falls in love with Mike Brady, who has three sons of his own, Greg, Peter, Bobby. That is essentially it. Another character is their maid, Alice, who, you know, is she a living maid?
She was taking care of the Brady men after his wife died. So she was the housekeeper for them.
Yeah.
And then she moved in, and I think her room was under that iconic staircase.
So she was his maid. I didn't know that. I thought they hired her.
Yeah, because, you know, back in 1969, a man with three kids couldn't raise them without a female, because he would not have ever cooked or made a bed or anything like that.
The good old days, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I did not know that. So she came with the marriage. Do you think that she approved of Carol from the get-go, or do you think she was, like, hostile at first?
It was 1969, and this was a sitcom. You know, I think she was, given her personality, her ebullient personality, I think that she was all in on Carol. And who knows, may have even had a little crush. Who's to say?
And that's the thing. That is the stuff that the show dealt with. You know, it's 1969. The show just, you know, doesn't have the... what 1969 is known for, like Easy Rider, you know, we had just landed on the moon and all that. None of this is in the Brady Bunch. It's very wholesome. It's very geared towards family, and it's very PC and like very, you know, like nice toothpastey content. And there's nothing wrong with that. It actually works really well. You know, it deals from everything from like just like awkwardness as a kid to believing in your siblings and believing what they say and trust issues. Like, I actually went back and I watched a lot of the episodes that they referenced in the film. Let me bring this up a little bit.
Oh, that's smart.
And one of them was one of the first episodes of the show ever was Cindy loses her Kitty Carey doll.
Yeah. I remember
and
that
because Bobby was so vocally against it, you know, she automatically believed that he was the one who did something to that doll. And all the girls kind of like worked together. And it, you know, the whole thing there is someone is, you know, innocent before proven guilty and stuff. And they did like a mock jury and a trial at a court and all this stuff, you know. Kids, you know, I mean, I never did any of that stuff, but I love it when they do it at TV shows.
I mean, I remember that only because I also remember seeing it on the Rugrats, which is one of my favorite Rugrats episodes.
Yep, they did. Yeah, we just talked about that. Yeah.
Interesting. Huh. Do you think they did it first, or do you think other shows did it before them?
I'm sure other shows did it before them, too.
I don't know. I don't know. How groundbreaking do you think the Brady Bunch was?
It wasn't groundbreaking at all, and I don't think it was.
Oh, interesting. Fact, and yet, it's so iconic. Uh-huh.
Well, there was a movie, actually, that predated it called Yours, Mine, and Ours, which I remember.
Yes, with Henry Fonda. And
It was Lucille Ball and Henry Fonda.
Yep.
And it was very similar. It was like... a widow and a widower who had a whole brood of kids married. And I think Lucy was probably not young enough at the time, but I think they had like a baby together, and that's why it's Yours, Mine, and Ours. So it sure might've gotten the inkling of an idea from that. But certainly I think by the time that he did, like Nicole was saying, it was much more prevalent to have mixed family.
It might have actually been around the same time, because Yours, Mine, and Ours came out in 1968. The show debuted in 1969, so they kind of just went right after the other.
Sherwood wasted no time.
Yeah, seriously, he jumped on that.
He got off Gilligan's Island and into...
Yeah. Now, do you remember, actually, how far after the Brady Bunch did the Partridge Family come out?
I don't think very long, because the Friday night, it was one of those iconic nights of television for a while there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Brady's, Partridge Family, Room 222, which did actually address some of the issues for young kids. It was set in a mixed race, if you will, high school.
Mm-hmm.
So it tackled, you know, drugs and so in a comical way. But it was one of the first ones to deal with, you know, like really life outside the Brady bubble.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Interesting. I never heard of it. A
year later, Partridge Family
came out in 1990. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, there you go. So that makes sense.
Immediately in response. And I think that's also why the Brady Bunch themselves took up music, so that they could compete with the Partridge Family. Because Partridge Family is known for being a musical band. So.
Sure, and David Cassidy was selling a lot of records back then. He was a teenage heartthrob, so that may be why they threw in Johnny Bravo.
yes, Johnny Bravo that Greg develops.
Johnny Bravo is that's like the alter ego, right?
Yeah, that's the rock star persona. That he,
yes. I also,
you know, the song with the clowns. Clowns won't cry again, and beanstalks never grew.
Yes, they use that in the movie, Rolando. The movie. I don't know if you remember that.
Did they?
They did. Yeah, Johnny Bravo. Greg wanting to be Johnny Bravo is in the movie too.
Yes, we'll talk about in a little bit.
But yeah, actually, it's so funny too, because the Brady Bunch produced quite a lot of music in their later seasons, to the point where they actually had an album, and maybe they had multiple. But when the Brady's had a bit of a revival because of the hit of the movies in the 90s, I got into the Brady's, and I remember buying two of their CDs, and I know some of those songs very well still.
Oh, my goodness. That's so funny.
Is that such a shock?
I just made a summer playlist, and the last song, just to end it off, was It's a Sunshine Day.
That's such a good one, yeah.
Sing it, Joe.
I will not.
Man, I could name some obscure Brady songs on that too. Like, one of my favorite ones out of those albums was a song called Carousel, which is, you know, nothing to do with Rodgers and Hammerstein or anything like that, but it's them just talking about going to a carnival and having a great time.
Riding, and riding the carousel?
Yeah, just like a good time. Cotton candy.
Well, don't forget, at that time also, you had the Osmonds and you had the Cowsills, and there were a few different really bubblegum pop groups that were actual families.
There you go. See, that's also something that, yeah, is good to think about.
Yeah, actually, now that you mentioned it, so I think you guys just bursted a bubble for me, because I only know the Brady Bunch basically just through reruns and stuff. And, like, it has kind of a legacy, right? Like, the Brady Bunch is iconic. It is still something that gets referenced a lot in pop culture. You know, Marsha. The Sure Jan came from the movie, but, like, it is still a part of that Brady Bunch, like, like,
well, yeah, if you say, oh, my nose, everybody knows exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even actually, because of Zoom, right, during the pandemic, when everyone's in the Zoom, the reference everyone would say is like, Brady Bunch, we're doing the Brady Bunch thing. So, I mean, this is just a show that has such a long-lasting impact in pop culture, despite the fact that you guys are telling me here that it's not original. It was trying to copy, like, other things. So it's just like, what? How did this show become so iconic? Like, what's his mojo here? Because I know the show, like, for me, I would watch a show to pass the time. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't watching this show to really be entertained, but I also wasn't of that generation. So, like, I mean, Joe, you tell me, like, what do you think it is that made this show what it is?
Well, I think it was pretty much the end of that kind of show, of the Ozzie and Harriet Donna Reed kind of show. I think, with that and Partridge Family, and then you had Room 222 and you had Mod Squad, and you started having teenagers that actually started looking and acting like teenagers in real life. Mm-hmm. They were all appealing. They were appealing characters. The girls were pretty. The boys were cute. You know, Florence Henderson is adorable, you know. But it's basically a young people's show. I think older people, you know, at that time had no use for it. You know, I think it was popular in the same way that Full House was and Mr. Belvedere and Step by Step, shows that I totally outgrew, but they were huge in their day.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's true. I guess, like, when you mention it, that when you put it in that perspective, that makes sense too, because, like, I loved Full House growing up, right? I was the target demo, and watching it now, it's just like, oh my god, this is so saccharine, this is awful, what was I thinking?
And I think you just proved a certain point, because what you just said about me making it clear to you, you could have been any of the Bradys saying, gee, Dad, I never thought of it like that.
Well, you know, looking at
therein lies the beauty of the Brady.
Looking at it from like a historical timeline too, I do wonder how much of it was a response to the times. You know, 1969, that is like the height of the 60s. You know, MLK had been shot, RFK had been shot. You know, all of like everything that the 60s kind of culminated into just had like this kind of big bang. And, you know, cinema at that time too was like starting to really challenge television in the early 60s. TV was king, and then movies started like coming back out on top. You know, I mentioned Easy Rider and Bonnie Clyde and The Graduate, all these new types of films and stuff, and it was pushing our culture in The Graduate in a completely different direction. So part of me wonders how much of it was the Brady Bunch's, you know, quotation conservative response to that. Because it was also like, you know, we got to make sure that there's family shows out there and that there are things.
Yeah, absolutely. It was trying to hang on to that innocence. I mean, you know, being a kid growing up in the 60s and, you know, having the news on during dinner and seeing the Vietnam War and seeing, you know, the civil rights struggle and all that, you know, we were watching it on TV. And, you know, I think my parents were very happy to sit me. And again, I was 9 years old, so I wasn't a toddler, but the Brady Bunch is the perfect thing to sit a 9-year old in front of to get away from all those other things, you know, and because again, they were becoming less and less. I mean, Petticoat Junction and Beverly Hillbillies and Gilligan, they were all gone, you know, and you're going in now into, you know, around the time that the Bradys ended, you already had All in the Family and MASH and Maude, and these were the number one sitcoms in the land, and Mary Tyler Moore, and they were all geared to adults.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's, yeah, that was also now the time of oh man, the guy who created All in the Family. I can't remember.
Norman Lear.
Yeah, the Norman Lear era, you know, and how much he changed television.
Norman Lear, for those listeners who've been with us a while, know that we covered One Day at a Time, which was, you know,
definitely one of our favorites.
And yeah, but like, and then
he's one of the people
was so good, the original.
Yeah. he's one of the people who changed, who did the most to change television into what we know it now. Absolutely. And he's still around. He's like 100. And he's still alive.
He was part of the new one.
That's right.
He was part of the new one.
He was involved in the new one.
They just did a couple of live readings of a couple of the Jeffersons and All in the Family with Marissa Tomei and Woody Harrelson as Edith and Archie. And he was there, you know, Kimmel was hosting and he was there and he's still, you know, I can't, better than me because I can't think of the term that I'm trying to say. Hard as a whip.
Or still kicking it, as the kids say.
Still kicking it, as the kids say, you know, stop.
Well, you know, so it's just interesting too, because when you think about Brady Bunch, 69 to 74, when I at least think about it, and I think, oh my God, all the things happening in that country, you almost, other than their fashion sense, you would never really tell that that was the time period in which it happened in, because when I think of the Brady Bunch episodes, like you said, oh my nose, Marsha, you know, oh my God, I can't go to prom, or like getting Davy Jones to be at my prom, or going to Hawaii, yes, or Johnny Bravo, and none of it really deals with what was going on in this country. Yeah, and right, the show just kind of seems like it's just, it wasn't its purpose, you know, kind of like what we were talking about last week with, or the week before, whenever that was, with iCarly, you know, how sometimes these shows are also just kind of like, hey, ignorance is bliss, you know?
Well, I don't want to jump ahead any, but I think that's what the movie.
And that, was, yep, wow. I actually, yeah, so, think that is a, excellent segue into the movie.
Let's do it. Oh, actually, before we just jump into the movie,
can we talk about our favorite episodes?
Yeah, I was saying, we didn't talk about our favorite episodes, guys.
We could always go back to it. You know, it's not like now we can't talk about the original.
I mean, we can, but I mean, how could we just not talk about our favorite episodes? Just a quick round robin, everyone.
Yeah, sure. What's your favorite episode, Rolando?
Mine is the one where the middle Brady, the boy, Peter?
Peter.
Okay, so Peter wanted to go on a double date with Greg, right? So he ends up getting a mustache and faking his age and stuff. And I don't know why that I have such a distinct memory of that episode, but obviously hilarity ensues when she finds out. It's like, you're just that kid. But like, that's a cute episode. It's one of my favorites. It was a boy storyline too. I feel like a lot of the stuff that I remember tends to be like very Jan and Marsha focused.
Yeah, Cindy, me too. Even. Yeah. No, yeah. I'm always Jan and Marsha. That's like hardcore. I know
mine were pretty much Peter centric too.
Yeah, see, there you go. See, look at that. We should have
chops and apple chosh.
Well, for me, really quick, the Davy Jones episode is just always such a pleasure. And I actually quite enjoy the monkeys.
And yeah,
I love them. Yeah, the monkeys are cool.
I actually have two. One, and they're both Jan-centric, actually.
Oh.
And one is referenced hilariously in the movie, and it's probably my favorite part, is when, you know, Jan, always under the shadow of Marsha, decides to redo her image, and she gets a black afro wig.
Yep.
And just the sheer absurdity of it, it's almost, you know, it's like Kafka in its way. It's so bizarre.
Yep.
But the other one is a sweeter episode and kind of, well, yeah, it's, I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, with a comedian known Imogene Coca.
I know her. Yeah,
she's from the earliest days of television. She was on Sid Caesar's show, and she was like a Lucy or a Carol Burnett or any of the Saturday Night Live ladies. She used to do sketch comedy on Sid Caesar's show, and she's hilarious. And some people may also know her as the grandmother from the first National Lampoon movie. And she was a wonderful, but she had that goofy comedian face. She wasn't what you'd call a beauty. And in this episode, they find a picture of, I don't remember exactly how it, they find an old picture in a trunk of this aunt, I say aunt, so we're gonna go with that. And as a child, she was a spitting image of Jan. And so they get in touch with her, she comes to town, and Jan sees her and sees that she's kind of this goofy looking lady. And she's just heartbroken. She's like, that's what I'm going to grow up to be. I'm not going to be a great beauty. And then, you know, Imogene Coker's character just talks about all the amazing things she's done and the travel and who she's met and what she's done and her life of adventure. And then at the end, Jan is just like, it doesn't matter what I look like. You're just a beautiful soul. And that's what I want to be. So, you know, we were talking about the kind of silliness of it, but it's the one that I remember because it was heartfelt.
Actually, that sounds very heartfelt. I never seen this episode, so that sounds like a lovely one, actually.
Yeah.
That sounds cute.
Yeah, that sounds like one I want to watch.
Yeah.
That was very good. That was a good episode.
Eddie Z, what do you got for us? What's one of your favorites?
Okay, so this one has always left an impression on me. When I was a little kid watching the Brady Bunch, the episode called Fright Night, which is, I think it's like season 4, episode 6. And it's the whole thing of like when the brothers do a trick and scare the sisters and the sisters get back at them. But there's like the whole scene when the sisters, when the girls kind of create like this plastic ghost thing that creeps out like there's like a chest. They're sleeping in the attic. The chest opens up. And this plastic ghost thing just comes out, and it's like you hear this like, oh, let me out. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. As a little kid, that terrified me. That terrified me. I had nightmares about that scene alone.
Oh, my God.
As a kid. The Brady Bunch giving nightmares. But what I loved about it was it was like a whole episode of scaring each other, even scaring Alice. And I remember because I'm also one of six. I have 5 siblings. And that's something that we used to do. Aww. As kids. It's just like we would just like find ways to scare and terrorize each other and play, you know, practical jokes. I just kind of appreciate that little moment.
According to your sisters, you were quite the terror. So.
I was quite the terror.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. I just want to bring up really quickly that in the Henderson spoof that we did, the Hamilton spoof called Henderson, Eddie actually played Peter.
We would not speak of this.
Well, it's going to be linked.
Oh, I gotta watch it. Again.
And Rolando played a character we have not as yet mentioned.
I was a butcher, right?
You were Sam the Butcher.
Alice's love.
Alice's beau.
Yeah. Wow.
Always delivering the meat.
As they say in the movie, he delivered the meat.
Oh,
yes.
My gosh. I gotta rewatch this immediately.
Yes.
So, you know, the Brady Bunch, actually, when it came out, it wasn't the most successful show, you know, critically or commercially. But
wait, really?
Yeah, actually, it got more popular in syndication.
Wow, I am learning so much about the Brady Bunch here. I really thought this show was like a phenomenon.
Yeah, no, it's just for some reason it's had staying power. But that's also because actually they had a lot of reunion films and they had a lot of spinoffs. And that was something that I also remember during the Brady revival in the 90s watching. Like one of them was the Brady Girls Get Married, where, you know, Marsha and Jan.
The Brady Brides.
The Brady Brides, yep. Yeah, it was, they had 2 specials.
Is that what it's called, The Brady Brides?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Well, it was a series. They actually made a series out of it where they were the 2 older girls were actually getting married.
Yeah.
Because right after the show, you know, these kids couldn't get work anywhere else because they were, you know, as actors, they were just too well known as the Bradys and no one would hire them.
Typecast.
So they did their best to distance themselves from Eve Plum got the most far. She did a TV movie called Dawn, Portrait of a Runaway.
Oh, that's the one where she becomes a prostitute.
And it was really street gritty kind of movie of the week kind of thing. And, you know, they've all gone to other things, but what they kept, you know, so they had to keep on going back to, they did the Brady variety show, the Brady animated series. You know,
the
even
Christmas
up
special,
the Christmas special, yes, where Carol sings Mike to safety outside
of the building. She uses the power of song
and of song, and even up until just a year or two ago when they did a very Brady renovation, or I think it was called like that on HGTV, where for the first time in decades, they actually got all 6 of the kids to participate.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. And they, do you not know about this?
I did not know about this. This is
they bought HGTV bought the original home, the exterior. Now, of course, the interior was all a set. It couldn't physically fit into that, into the outside of it.
That would make sense, yeah.
So they bought it and they remodeled it. Like, they blew out the whole back of it so that they could put in, you know, upstairs, because it's a ranch from outside. And they did. And they, and like every week for about 6 or 8 weeks, I actually have it on DVR. I've only the first episode into it, but they got like the Property Brothers and all the HGTV people to help out. But all six of them showed up, and for the first time they were all together in ages. And it's neat, you know. And they did a Christmas special where they decorated the this new Brady house. I think it's sort of like a tourist attraction.
Wow. I actually want to watch that, but yeah, it's so interesting. I just found out something. Today, on June 30th, on Paramount Plus, the streaming service celebrated Pride Month with the premiere of a crossover special combining the Brady Bunch with RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes. Oh, yes. I forgot that that was today.
That's today.
It's today. Greg is playing Mike, and they have drag queens. I think Bianca Del Rio is actually playing Carol.
Yes. Ooh. Yeah. Bianca Del Rio is Carol. Mm-hmm.
They have drag queens playing the three girls and Alice.
Yeah. Nina West is playing Alice.
And Ben Della Creme is actually playing Greg.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's I forgot. I'm done with you guys. I gotta go watch
that.
Seriously,
yeah, seriously, we gotta go watch it.
I'm about ready to wrap up on this podcast. That
well, I'm, yeah, no, we're all watching this afterwards. But you know what else? Yes. RuPaul was in. RuPaul was in the 1996 film.
Yes, yeah. RuPaul was. And what a
now that's
of hope
a segue.
She was in that one.
Yes, she was.
Yeah.
She must have been in the very Brady sequel too.
She was,
because I just saw the first one again, and I'm waiting for Moesha, and it's not in.
It's the second one.
It's in a very Brady sequel, not in a Brady movie. So that's a reason to watch both of them.
So you know, it's interesting because when you think about the '90s, there's so many TV shows, old TV shows that were made into movies well into the early 2000s. You know, the Addams Family movies were so successful that Hollywood was like, we got to keep doing this, you know? Mm-hmm. And like I said, they continued, like, remember when Starsky and Hutch came out in the early 2000s and stuff? Like, they kept doing like movie versions of 70s TV shows for a long time. And I think that
even Chips
was made
Chips.
Into one.
They did Beverly Hillbillies with Cloris Leachman as Granny.
They see.
Ooh. I don't remember Beverly Hillbillies. That's interesting.
Do you remember the actual sitcom?
I remember the show, but I don't think it was
actually Jed Clampett. The only other person in it that I remember was Hey Vern. I forget the actor's name, but he did the Hey Vern commercials and Ernest goes to
Ernest guy. Okay.
He played Jed Clampett, yeah, and Cloris Leachman was Granny. I don't remember anybody else in it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I've never seen that either.
I remember Dukes of Hazzard with Jessica Simpson.
That's right. The Dukes of Hazzard was another one. Yes, very good. See,
so that awful cover of Boots Were Made for Walking.
Yes, Charlie's Angels, which we covered.
Get Smart with Steve Carell and Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, Get Smart too. Yeah,
love that show as a kid.
Yeah.
Did you like the movie?
No.
Movie wasn't great, but the two of them were. Perfect for those two roles, so it made it seem better than it was.
It sounds like we have the makings of like lots of these throwbacks.
Yes. No, absolutely, yeah. And choose from. Definitely go back and listen to our Charlie's Angels episode because that's definitely one of the more iconic
that was
ones.
A good
but
one.
And we also did Addams Family, and now we are finally getting to, I think, one of the best, you know, TV shows turned movie parody. The Brady Bunch. Probably, actually, I think I like it better than The Addams Family, which is
The Addams Family is like a good movie, but like this takes... I mean, all right. If you haven't seen the Brady Bunch movie, you don't know. I think they did it... There was so much wit in this movie that it transcends like the original show, and it kind of really, really... It's like such a statement on like the 90s and like the actual Addams... not The Addams Family, The Brady Bunch.
Yeah, well, also like kind of... statement on ignorance too, and like how things, like, you know, we like it when things don't change, you mm-hmm. know, like there's so many levels to it, because you know what was interesting about the Addams Family was that the comedy was based on how much of a contrast they were to their surroundings, right? Mm-hmm. So they decided to keep that intact with the Brady Bunch by making them stuck in the 70s, but here they are straight in the mid-90s. Yeah. And everything around them, they're in direct contrast to. And it's almost like they have no idea that time has gone on. They're in the 90s.
Right.
You know, it's not the... It's almost like the movie almost begs the question, you know, like, have they just been stuck in a bubble for 20 years in a loop, well, you know?
Yeah. You know, both of those shows are very different in style, and but the overriding theme when you go back at them is that they're very families that are very insular. They're in their own little world, you know. Yeah. The Addams Family, because, you know, they're really not that different in the Bradys, and when you think about it, but they've always been out of time, out of step, even back in the 60s. The Brady Bunch, it's just like they are in, you know, their whole bubble was picked up and dropped 33 mm-hmm. years, yeah. 30 years later.
It's actually a genius move too, because you retain what you like so much about the original show, right? You know,
well,
like
what you didn't like, what you
and what you didn't like, yeah.
Like if you were super critical of the Brady Bunch, you still will enjoy this movie because it's so cutting.
Mm-hmm.
In like the most delicious way possible.
And yeah, and then it's like, okay, let's take all of the episodes, you know, Greg being Johnny Bravo, you know, Marsha asking two people out to the prom or to the dance, Jan's insecurities, Cindy missing her doll, Peter's hormones, you know, let's take all of them. They're all happening at the same time. Let's recreate all these episodes and then do like a comedic twist on it.
And got a second for another trivia?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Charlie Anderson, who was Marsha's original date for the dance, was Schwartz in A Christmas Story. The kid who got the kid who got his mouth washed out with soap, not the one who got stuck to the flagpole.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of the Brady Bunch people made made cameos in this film, right? So I think Peter is when Dittmeyer's about to beat the crap out of Peter. Older, like real Peter, original Peter is like, Dittmeyer, do it and die.
He was like the coach,
When Greg goes to some Seattle grunge music producer to try and sell Johnny Bravo, mm-hmm. that's the original Greg Brady. I know the original Alice picks up Jan in the truck and talks to her.
She's a truck driver.
Very reminiscent of Large Marge from Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
And then, of course, at the end, Grandma is played by Florence Henderson.
Florence Henderson, yes.
He is Florence Henderson.
I mean, I think she was the only one that everyone was just waiting to see, you know, because I think Florence Henderson is the most iconic person to come out of the Brady Bunch, in my opinion, at least. I don't know. There's something about Florence Henderson.
Well, she was probably the only one. Well, Robert Reed had done The Defenders, which was a drama, a lawyer show, and it is different Defenders. Ann B. Davis was known as a kind of actually an Imogene Coca type the Many Loves of Dobie Gillis, which was even before my time.
Yes.
Playing a character named Schultzy, which was her CB handle in the movie. But Florence Henderson was a Broadway star. She had showed in movies. She was the one who was well known of that cast.
Oh, yeah. Florence Henderson did Broadway?
Yeah, she's a
girl. Did you not even listen to the old song that you were in the video of?
I don't remember you mentioning Broadway.
Wait, did she did a Peter Pan, right?
Opened a doorway and went to Broadway. Then she
Song
of Norway. Come on.
I thought we were doing
I'm leaving. I'm gonna go watch.
So offensive, Rolando. Jeez.
Look at that.
Rolando.
So that's, I mean, she definitely is the biggest star, was was it beforehand? Like, I think, you know, people still to this day know who Florence Henderson is, even if they don't know the Brady Bunch too. So I'm glad more than anybody, she is like the one who, she had like the best reveal too, when like she turned around and it's like, oh my God, it's grandma. And she's like right at the end, like perfect timing. The Monkees even made a
rest
debut.
In peace, Florence Henderson.
Yes, rest in peace. They even made a cameo, the Monkees. All three of them, they were the judges of the talent show, which is why the Brady Bunch won. Because the judges were the Monkees. I mean, there's just so much to this movie works. I don't even know where to begin. I think... Well,
can I just begin?
Yeah, go for it.
The casting was brilliant from top to bottom.
Yeah.
You may not... I mean, Shelley Long seemed perfect. Gary Cole, you might have been, he's okay. But then when he starts talking and it's just like, it was just perfection. And the kids, Taylor as Marsha was perfect.
Yes.
But I think the standout is Jennifer Elise Cox as Jan.
I think, I feel like the mystique or like the reputation of Jan got enhanced by her performance in this film. I think that.
I would agree.
Yeah. She's just so hilarious. I think my favorite My favorite part is when they realize that this, you know, the house, they might have to raise money because they might have to move. And they're like, oh my God, we're going to have to go to a new school, you know, and get a new house. And Jan's like, and make new friends. And Marsha goes, but Jan, you don't have any friends. And Jan just stares at her in the death stare. Literally, like, my comedy, like put into one scene, it's like that is what I find funny. It's just such good comedy.
Marsha doesn't get through this movie of like unscarred as far as being, you know, likable all the time. Yeah. She is kind of mean to Jan,
and it's so good. And I think the thing that makes Jan's like for the performance so good for me is the body language.
Yes.
She just has like, it's such a physical performance. The way she walks, the way she carries herself, like she becomes the embodiment of what, not the actual Jan from the TV show, but like what we remember of her, which is like kind of, she's the middle child. No one likes her because of Marsha. So like she embodied that in a way that was just like almost, it wasn't a caricature. It was such a like respect to it.
Well, there's one point where she turns around and walks away. And her hair goes back and forth behind her. And the other scene that had me actually laugh out loud is a Jan scene, but it was her stunt double when she got on her bike and took her glasses off.
Yeah.
And just kept on riding into the fence and then the hedges. And
yeah.
Just hilarious.
Oh, yeah. No, even the scene with RuPaul, you know, RuPaul, she goes to see the school counselor and RuPaul's like, so what can I help you with? You know, you're getting bullied, teen pregnancy. And Jen's like, no, it's my glasses. it's just so good. Like that, the conflict that's constantly building between like they're, you know, like stuck in their own bubble, between the reality of the 1990s, the constant comedy that they could find out of it that is always working too, is just, it's gold actually.
Yeah. And the obliviousness to it all. I mean, you know, riding the escalator, you know, mall with their guitar singing Sunshine Day and being looked at like they're crazy and just smiling back. Even Cindy. When Michael McKean's character is just like calling her Swiss Miss and Heidi. And she just, okay, bye.
Or when she goes and Jean Smart's there and Jean Smart's making all these sexual innuendos and that Cindy tells the parents about and they just have no clue.
She wants to wrap your package. Yeah. And can we just say Jean Smart, who is brilliant no matter what she
does. I love Jean Smart.
So
good.
I didn't know of her until Watchmen, and now she's like one of those.
Ah, Designing Women.
Designing Women. Charlene.
I love her.
For not knowing, but.
You know, this film is actually also kind of meta. One of my favorite scenes in the whole movie is when Michael McKean's character is telling, you know, why they should sell. And he's like, hey, he starts all these rumors about them. And then all the neighbors start talking about, like, you know, they're always happy. Like, what family is always happy like that? You know,
I don't even think they have a toilet.
Yeah, one bathroom for eight people, and I've never seen a toilet. You know, that's like remarking about, like, the set for the TV show, you know, and how it was like, how did they only have one bathroom? Like those kind of meta elements too are just, it's like a chef's kiss. It's like,
Well, I think, you know, it's funny because I think one of the very first All in the Families where just like, where's Pop? Where's Dad? And then you hear a flush from upstairs. And it's like the first time that the fact that human beings have toilets and need toilets was ever addressed, because the response from the audience, who never expected anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's like Rob and Laura Petrie, who had little Richie, even though they slept in separate beds. So, I mean, that's... At least Mike and Carol got to sleep in the same bed and are even shown as being amorous in the movie.
Yes, something we never really saw, at least too much of in the original. But actually, yes, Rolando, I see you have a confused look. Toilets were considered taboo. They were not.
I can't believe, I mean, I know, like, I mean, we all know about, like, Lucille Ball, like, being the first to say pregnant, I think, on TV.
But they didn't. They didn't.
Oh, is that what it is? Or she wouldn't even be allowed to say pregnant? She was the first to show an actual pregnancy. That's what it was. But she didn't even get to say it. And I was just like, TV norms were just weird back then. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, listen, look at half the stuff that's happening in this country today. And it's no different. It really isn't. I mean, things have moved more in increments than you think.
Absolutely. But so it's shocking when you think about like a toilet, really, you know, but I mean, but also think about what it must have been like to be a woman who needed to use the bathroom in the 1950s.
Well, if you have to comb your hair 1,000 times, you know, but it also introduced me to the idea of the Jack and Jill bathroom, which I had never seen before, which is a bathroom shared by doors on two sides.
Yeah.
And the girls had, you know, I'd never seen anything like that. So that seemed like the one thing that the Bradys were really modern in 1969. They have a bathroom with two separate doors. For six children.
I would say that the one thing about this movie too is that the boys kind of don't get enough love. I think that they had just so much to work with Jan, and that Jan really became the star of at least the kids. But like when you think about like especially like Peter and Bobby, they don't shine too much in this movie.
No,
definitely not Bobby. But I think Peter was trying to win the talent show, so he had kind of his was like part of the A plot.
You think so?
You know what I mean.
Yeah, no.
Like he wasn't.
I wouldn't say Peter.
I would say for sure the star of this is definitely Jan, without a doubt, because she's the one who ends up running away. And, you know, we have that whole sequence with her. But I don't know. I remember. Oh, wait. Was I saying the wrong one?
Thinking about Greg, because he's the one who wrote the song, and then they were
Greg is the one who. I'm sorry. Peter's the middle. I forget which Peter.
Peter was the one who was fainting every time he saw.
Yeah, and he was talking like this because he's in his
yes.
When well, it's time to change, gotta rearrange.
But this is mostly Jan's movie. Rightfully so. Like this is, I mean, it couldn't have gone to a more perfectly cast like character. You know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, and the show dealt with the movie dealt with things that were only kind of hinted at or at least implied for the audience. Like, you know, just how much Jan hated Marsha. And a big thing is sexual tension. Peter, right, with him and his hormones and stuff, like he all of a sudden sounds like Elvis when he gets a kiss. Or, you know, all the guys girls wanting to bang Marsha. You know, like sex actually became more of a plot point in the movie, especially in the sequel when they were like, oh, Greg and Marsha, you know. They start to have some sexual tension that becomes a real thing, like a real plot point in the second one. Because everyone who watched the show was like, wait a minute, these two, there's nothing? Like, you know.
Well, you know, these six kids didn't have hormones in the show. They want the cute big man on campus or the groovy chick, but you know that sex is not in the, you know, they're hoping to like get a kiss on the lips.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, so we finally got to see that aspect in the movie.
Yeah.
So, all right. So who actually saw, because I didn't see this movie in the theaters. I remember watching this on like, I think on like HBO or Showtime, like when it came into that run. I don't know. Did anyone see this in theaters?
I did.
Oh, you did? Good for you, Nicole. Eddie?
No, this was like a video, something I rented.
I might have, just for, you know, because it was just like people my age. It was just like, oh my God, we got to go see that. We have to go to the theater to see. And again, you know, we were going to the movie theaters more back when that movie came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
One thing that struck me really funny in the movie, it's kind of meta in that the whole joke is kind of goofing on what they're dressed like and what they look like. And it was made in 1996, was it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now 95. In 2021,
damn, a year later,
we're watching all the kids in the high school who are looking down on the Bradys and the whole, like, this is what grownups think grunge looks like. And so when you're looking at the 90s fashion, I'm looking at it the same way they were looking at the Bradys. I'm like,
yeah, absolutely. Well, that's also what's so interesting about watching the movie now is how, you know, they're like, oh my God, the 70s is so dated and look at how like kitschy and whatever. You think that about watching it now when you look at the 90s. Yeah.
That's interesting that you guys say that, because 90s style is actually kind of, if you look like TikTokers, they are literally living like it's the 90s.
Kind of. Yeah, but even the sentimentalities are like the mentalities overall.
Yeah, it's usually like a 20-year cycle, you know. Yeah. I never stopped living like the 80s. I'm still... I'm still listening to The Cure and
your rhythm. and now is the time for the 90s to kind of... Well, actually, the 2010s were more so the time for the 90s in terms of the 20-year cycle. So I think the 2000s are going to make a comeback in terms of style. So we're going to see words painted on girls' butts again.
You know? Oh, I was going to ask, was there a style?
There was a style, and we're all trying to forget about it.
Wait, are you talking about Juicy? Like the Juicy Coutures?
Yeah, amongst other things, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And crop tops and whatnot.
Crop tops, yeah.
Yeah.
When did wool hats in the swelter of summer become a thing? That's just something I just noticed one day.
Someone was wearing a wool hat?
Really?
They did, all the hipster dudes. Oh, with the wool hats like pull down, and it's just like it's 90 degrees out, and I'm just like, oh, dude, I'm going to make my artisanal honey, so I can take my wool hat off. You know,
that's dedication to style, I guess.
Sorry, hipsters in the audience.
Yeah,
now I have to look this up. Oh wow, yeah, okay, yeah. Sorry, mm-hmm. I had to look that up.
Was it a bucket
quick.
Hat? I think those are also coming back in vogue. Bucket hats,
kind of like beanies,
like
right?
Kangol.
I'm thinking, how to describe it? Hang on. Like Blossom wore a lot of bucket hats.
I know. I'm just wearing my black afro, my curly black afro, just like Jan. Curly,
just like Jan?
Just like Jan. You know, hey, I'm a middle child. I feel those Jan vibes.
Do you? Yeah, I guess that would be the next question, right? All right, so you could relate to Jan and being like the... feeling like, you know, not the baby, not having the privilege of the oldest child and stuff. I'm the oldest, so I can't. I am the Jan of the.
And family. I had to wear glasses.
Not the Jan, the Marsha. So.
Oh yeah.
All right. So, what's it like being the Jan?
It's not. It's well. Listen, when you get my age, it's just like you don't even really feel like a middle child. It hasn't mattered for a very long time. But yeah, I mean, you know. When you're a middle child, you look up to your older sibling at the same time. And I think especially if you're of the same gender, you're jealous of them. You know, A, they get to do things before you get to. Just why? Well, John's 12 now and you're only 9. John, you know. So, you know, it's just natural, you know. And then you're right. Then the baby comes along. So. You're not the baby anymore, and you're not the beloved firstborn. So, you're bringing up a lot of issues for me.
apologies, Eddie. Eddie, you're also a middle child, right? Like you're smack in the middle, aren't you?
Smack in the middle. I'm number 4, in the line, but I'm also the only boy. So yes, you have that, technically, I was.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well,
Nicole, where what's it called? Where do you where are you in your family? Like, are you a middle child?
I'm the baby. Oldest? I'm the baby.
You're the baby.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
What privilege.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
My little brother was born 9 years. I was nine. I was literally, the Bradys were on when my brother was born. So I was the baby for 9 years, and all along, all of a sudden, this thing comes along and just like grabs all the attention. And I'm like, oh, this, yeah. And then of course, as you get a little older, the older one and the younger one bond, and you're like, oh, all right. Well, this is not therapy. We're talking about the Bradys.
I mean, clearly, I guess Jan has every right to be unhinged.
Middle child syndrome is real, for sure. For
And I never tried to cut my brother's hair in the middle of the night.
It would have looked fabulous anyway, so.
Yes, it would have.
Did you know that they actually they made a third film? So, you know, the Brady Bunch movie was so successful that they followed it up with the second film, a very Brady sequel. They made a third direct-to-TV movie that was not so good, and
I
only had the parents.
Yay! I never heard of it until this very day.
Yep. It's actually the third film curse, because the same thing happened to the Addams Family, where, you know, there was always plans for a third film. Raul Julia died, and then after so much time, it changed, you know, like companies and studios, and then like it was a completely new cast, and it was so terrible that they just released it a TV movie. Kind of the same thing happened with the Brady Bunch one, and it's actually that the Brady Bunch in the White House.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who won the White House?
Well, Mike becomes vice president.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then the president gets caught up in a scandal, so Mike becomes president, and then has Carol installed as vice president. So it's sort of like, you know, it's Evita with Brady's.
I haven't seen it. But
that sounds like it has potential to be great. So that, you know what?
Does it though, Rolando?
I don't know about that. So. Maybe with the joint or something, it has the potential to be enjoyable.
Possibly.
But.
You might be right about that. All right. We chose to do this episode, right? The Brady Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, why do you think? What do you think it is about the Brady Bunch movie that makes it so near and dear to our hearts, right? Like, why, like, we've been doing this podcast for 3 years, and we have been talking about this movie for like the last 3 years. We wanted to cover this episode and stuff. But Nicole, I mean, why do you think, why? Like, why do we hold this one? I do hold it up as like a standard almost for me.
Yeah.
Like whenever like something gets rebooted or revived, because I'm just like, it was so smart. And I don't think I've seen anything yet that comes, that's done anything like it. I think things try, but not be successful at it.
Well, it's when something goes from a mere TV series to pop culture icon. You know, there's very few, I think, that actually have that kind of nostalgia. And never underestimate the power of nostalgia. And, you know, again, so much, because it was on for so long, there was always a hunger to have it on at some point. I think after I Love Lucy, it's the second most syndicated show ever. And it's just such a part of our cultural memory. Everyone knows things that we were talking about today. Everybody knows all those one-liners. And, you know, it's hunger for a simpler time, you know. I don't know.
You know, it's interesting, because I actually thought about it, and, you know, and I agree with what you're saying too. And just to piggyback off of that, you know, we're two movie fans. We grew up watching movies. We grew up watching TV, right? So here's kind of like a blend of, you know, the old with some new. It's a satire. It's a parody. But it also, like, not only does it kind of like, you know, ridicule or mock these things, but there are moments where it actually embraces it. You know, Jan coming home, that's actually a really sweet moment. That's not as funny. You know, despite some of the things that Mike says, you actually feel the connection between the family. You know, so it kind of balances all these things. And, you know, as media consumers and stuff, it like hits all these different like check marks for, I think, for at least for me. And then at the end of it, it's actually a really gay movie, I think, too. In terms of at least like the relationship between Jan and Marsha, you know, I feel like that's just such like a thing that at least the LGBT community responds so deeply to, like that rivalry and the cattiness and all of that. I mean, you got RuPaul in it. It's a fucking musical at the end of the day. Like, come on, it's so gay.
And there's even a gay couple in the neighborhood.
Yes, there is a gay couple in the neighborhood. Yep. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and like we said, you know, it actually like it expanded on like you said, they didn't have hormones in the original series, so we gave them hormones, and there's a lot of sexual tension in this movie too. So it's just kind of like all the things that you also wanted and didn't get, but then it's like, you know, a hark back to the original and the things that we feel that we know and the familiar. So.
And Alice in her Madonna, cone bra, negligee, whatever that bustier.
That was hilarious.
And the line from Sam the Butcher about, I'm just delivering the meat. And Sam the Butcher being played by Tackleberry from the Police Academy films.
Yes.
So there's a lot. The supporting cast is so terrific.
I don't know. They got something right here, and those are the reasons why I think they got something right. I don't know. What do you think, Rolando?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't even put a finger to it. I think for me, it's taking this idea. I think the idea of just plucking out this like insular family and just throwing them into the 90s just works. But I guess that kind of brings in my next question is just like, do you think a Brady revival or reboot could work in 2021 or later?
Having the mixed, you know, like just these two people meeting. So the premise were just taking place now. Yeah, it would probably be like an hour dramedy, and it would be eight is enough, frankly. Except that that was one family, but it would be like what teens are dealing with, you know. Susie's friend got pregnant, and it probably wouldn't happen to any of the kids, you know. It's just like, or Bobby's friend is hooked on drugs, and a family, which was a family show during the 70s. It would probably tackle the issue of the week, you know.
Unless
they did it with Seamless.
But there's no need. I mean, there's so many family shows like this already, you know. ABC Family was very big on this, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had the Fosters.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of different family shows. I feel like every generation has that it family show. We had Modern Family.
Right, Modern Family. That's a great
one. I don't think the premise is unique enough anymore to have it as just that premise.
And what about if they did the same thing they did with the 90s movie and taking that insular family and just dropping them in 2021 or 2022, right? Let's say, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
for production here.
I actually, you know, just because I enjoy the movie so much, I wouldn't mind seeing that, you know, like that. I wouldn't mind seeing the original Brady cast at whatever age they would be now stuck in their 70s-ness and then having to deal with 2022 issues.
Yeah. I mean, like the remaining Brady's, like the six of them. Well, they already got together for HGTV, so maybe.
Yeah, so maybe they could, you know. But they're probably, I don't know, in their 60s, bordering onto the 70s, and like, how does that dynamic work with, you know, everything that's going on in this day and age? You know, there could be some comedy there. I don't know if I don't know if I can write it, but you know, I'd be down to watch it.
Gerwig Schwartz is dead, so we're gonna have to find somebody else to do it.
Yeah, I wonder how involved he was with the film. I actually don't think he was that involved. I mean, there was like...
I think
he produced it in terms of, you know, executive produced, but that's about it. So...
It was his property.
Yeah.
By the way, guys, I was looking up the cast of the Brady Bunch movie, and the boy who played Bobby grew up to be a very, very handsome young man.
Did he?
It's so weird, like, right? Because I barely remember what he looked like as Bobby, but like he's very, very attractive.
It's the Peter thing. It's Peters are always cute. It just, and I could say that because I was his age back then. It's not like I was another nine. I was a 9 year old thinking another 9 year old was cute. So,
So it's not creepy.
It was not creepy. It was confusing, but it was not creepy.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know. Like, are we all braided out, Nicole? What do you think?
I mean, I think I said most of what I wanted to say on the film and on the original. This movie is almost 20 years old. It's actually almost 30 years old. I got that wrong. It's almost 30 years old.
No.
Yeah.
30, uh-huh.
It's.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Well, that must mean that I'm. Well, this has been fun.
And so I do encourage anyone who didn't even know that this movie existed to kind of, you know, go back and watch it because it's a riot. And you know,
it really holds up.
Yeah, it does hold up. Like, it doesn't feel like it's almost 30 years old. But yeah, I mean, that's all she wrote on Brady for me.
Yeah, that's all there is. I mean, like I said, we've been dying to do this episode for a while. I'm so glad we actually have someone who actually grew up with the Brady. Help us with this episode.
So I'm glad that my dotage came in handy for something. So,
well, I mean, the truth is, like, you are a fan. Like, I mean, the reason we thought of you for this episode was because you did such a wonderful tribute to Florence Henderson.
Yeah,
which we will include in the show links.
Love.
Yes,
and who doesn't, so,
like,
love.
You know, who better than an actual Brady themselves? But we can't afford that.
Listen, now that the HGTV show is over, they're probably waiting for your phone call, Rob. So,
but all right, this was great. Thank you so much, Joe, for joining us. Joe, where can people
having me
follow you on Instagram? Or, I mean, how do you want to be followed?
I am A Bitter Joe Show is available on YouTube. And I am on Instagram at Bitter Joe Show.
It's now called Bitter Joe Show now? Is that a bitter cup of Joe anymore?
Yes. And I'm on Twitter, but I'm rarely there. It's also Bitter Joe Show.
Bitter Joe Show, everyone. So be sure to check out, follow Joe. He's a very funny. He actually was doing these great recaps of the episodes of Game of Thrones when it was still running. And they still get targeted to me at YouTube, even though I've seen those.
And there's a prequel coming up, so it's back to the north.
You're gonna come back.
Winter is coming back. Hey, Anthony's gotta, you know, he's gotta come back. He's gotta say what's going on.
yes. So be sure to follow Joe, and then be sure to also follow us if you're not following us. Nicole, where can people follow us?
Oh boy, always hand it off to me for this part. So I could say the
mouthful. I do, because I feel like you're way more succinct than I am. I feel like I stumble into it.
You can follow us. Go to Instagram, Remakes, Reboots, Revivals. That is our handle. You can follow us at facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals. We are also on Twitter at Remakes Podcast. You can always reach out to us via email, remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. This really does help us expand our audience. And we also just love to hear from you guys. And if you would like to actually speak with us and maybe leave us a voicemail, you should call our hotline. And Rolando, what is the number?
The number to the Remakes, Reboots, Revivals hotline is 862-248-2326. That's 862-248-2326.
Give us a call. Yes. All right. Well, thank you.
I'm calling right now.
You do. Joe, you call, you leave a voicemail. We'll play it. We'll play it on the air.
With you here right now, we'll play it back to you right now. Yeah.
Hello, is Joe there?
Well, this was so much fun. Thank you so much, Joe.
I had a ball. Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much, Rolando, for agreeing to do this episode. I mean, you know, because we had nothing else in store. So we're like, let's just do the Brady Bunch, right? Let's just do it.
I think we're waiting around right now to finish our Pride special and also to do, I guess the next one is what? Space Jam, guys, right?
Is that next? Jeez.
I feel like that's what's next. Yeah, Space Jam is coming out soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that note. Stay original.